Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. It is time for Movies and Booze. We're joined in the studio by Linda Coogan, Zara Hederman, and back from our honeymoon. And few people can say that Donald Trump had an effect on their honeymoon, but Fionnuala Jones is back. Good afternoon to you all.
It'll be a funny story in a few years, will it?
It might be, I suppose.
Yeah. Not really.
Because that's out of context now, could you briefly explain what happened?
Sorry, so we flew out the Saturday we were supposed to fly out the Saturday, the February 28th, and that is when the war kind of all really kicked off. And we were in the airport thinking, God, I wonder will they close the airspace? And they were in the process of doing that, would you believe? So we just had to go home. But it was fine. Okay. We weren't in a war-torn country.
You weren't going to Iran on your honeymoon.
No,
or anything.
We were going to Japan.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. Iran, but, Japan. You know, Americans, they probably thought it was the same place.
Yeah.
bombed it accidentally.
Yeah.
Right, so the two movies today, Undertone, is they a first-time director?
They are, yeah. Ian Toussaint. So a very promising directorial debut as well, and it began as a radio play. So we've got two independent filmmakers, as I said, Ian Toussaint, who's at the beginning, and then Jim Jarmusch, who's obviously a legend within the field.
Yeah.
His new film, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, is what cinephiles would call a quiet meditation on family strife.
Yeah. Though I don't mean this as disrespect at all, but I mean, there's quite common features in his films, and like he's done the kind of parallel story stuff before, and there's a lot of people who kind of pop up over and over again in his films.
This is his fourth anthology film, and I think it's about his fourth time working with Tom Waits, and also Adam Driver returns for his third appearance in a Jim Jarmusch. But what I found quite nice is it's 40 years since he worked with Tom Waits for the first time and 10 years since he worked with Adam Driver for the first time.
Okay.
And
right.
A Dublin prospect in this film.
Because part of it is set in Dublin.
In Dublin, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anybody Irish in the Dublin section?
There is. Sarah Green.
One.
Yeah.
Because Americans won't think it's weird that everybody gets an English accent in the Irish section. So Alsace, we're going to go to next.
Our
wine, which is, you know, disputed territory, depending if you're German or French, of course.
Well, it's French at the moment.
Yes.
They've had it for a while now. So yeah, two wines from Alsace. A Bubbles, which is a Cremant d'Alsace, so an alternative to Champagne, and then we have a Riesling. And again, lots of people are not familiar with Alsatian wines because they kind of, two things, they are in those tall flute-shaped bottles, so people are quite often put off by that shaped bottle. And they are also top shelf stock, right? Not necessarily because of the price tag, but because of the tall bottles, they don't necessarily fit on a standard shelf.
Right, okay.
So they tend to be out of eye level. Well, most things are out of my eye level, but they tend to be up higher and people kind of might forget about them. So I'm here to say, bring back Alsace.
Why did they put them in those bottles then?
It is the law and the rule of the land. So that's the way tradition has been and that's the way they are. So, yeah.
Okay. Isn't it kind of counterproductive for them?
Well, I was actually surprised. I thought they were all under cork, but this is actually a screw cap. So I thought, you know, they're lenient in some ways. The good thing about Alsace wines is that they actually name the grape on the front of the label, which is kind of unusual for France, because Bordeaux, we were expected to know the grapes could be Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon, etc. So they tell you what it is, which is helpful. So there's Riesling, there is Pinot Gris, there is Gewürztraminer and things like that. So,
right.
Yeah, interesting.
Is there a perception as well that wines from Alsace are all sweet wines?
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
You can get the ones we're trying are dry, 100% dry, and you can get sweet versions, which are dessert wines, but they're not, like, again, people mix them up with German, like Liefermidge and Blue Nun, that kind of thing, but they're not. Most of them are dry and they can have off-dry versions as well. Sipmac would be a well-known producer who does off-dry wines and they're gorgeous, but they can have a little label on the back saying the sweetness level. So yeah, majority of them would be dry and sommeliers love them. Most restaurants will have at least a couple of Alsace wines.
When you mention them there, I bet you thousands of people of a certain age said, Blue Nun, Liefermilch. They still make them. They adorned millions of students.
They got rebranded
back
and everything. They got rebranded. And then Bent in the River would have been a very famous German wine as well. That got rebranded as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I have. I mean, rebranded as in they kind of they're trying to make them more.
But they're
upmarket.
Low alcohol. They're low alcohol.
Oh,
so
are they?
Yeah, yeah. They'd be lower alcohol, so that's why people are like, "Ooh, it's healthier wine." You know.
Oh right.
But yeah, Alsace tends to be about 12%.
Not back in the day, they weren't low alcohol. They were specially designed for drinking and putting candles in. That's what it was for. Right. This is interesting because you think, you know, they're on the telly, therefore they're loaded. But this fella, Patrick Ball. Now, explain who Patrick, for people who watch The Pit.
Patrick Ball is Dr. Frank Langdon in The Pit. If you are watching on HBO Max, should.
Yeah, he's the number two in charge. He's just below.
The number, don't ask me to explain the medical hierarchy because I'm not really under, I still don't really understand it. But he's like a resident. Yeah, like very hotshot resident, yeah. Very capable doctor and kind of second in command to Dr. Robbie.
Yeah.
Dr. Robbie, who's played by Noah Wiley. They've kind of seen as like the second coming, his protege, we'll say. And he had been, Patrick Ball, now the actor, has been kind of working away and gigging away for however long trying to make it, got this role, and it's essentially gotten him out of a bundle of debt. Said he was an $80,000 student debt, and he's actually on Broadway at the minute. He's starring in Becky Shaw, which is about A Blind Date Got Wrong. Supposed to be very good as well, but he's obviously been doing a lot of interviews for that. And basically said that he thought he was going to take this kind of money to the grave, that he had kind of lost relationships over it, that he thought he would never be able to kind of get past it. But he said, I think it was within like 5 months of working on The Pit, he was able to, 3 months he said rather, he said that he was able to pay off the student debt, and that has kind of completely changed. He was at such a point, I think an ex-relationship, like the dad of the ex-girlfriend was trying to get him into the FBI to be like, maybe we should sack this off now, King, because you're not really getting anywhere and you've all this debt mounting up, whatever. But The Pit has kind of like rapidly changed his life. So
she's sorry now.
Yeah, truly.
He's the one with the nice hair, is he?
He is the one with the nice hair.
Yes,
yeah.
The black floppy hair. Yeah, yeah.
That would have been a better descriptor. I should have just said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The lovely brown quiff.
I'm usually way off. I never watch any of the things that are relevant and new and all the rest. But I'm on this now and I'm on the first episode. It's great.
It is really, really excellent. Really very good supporting cast.
It's a bit graphic, like it was pretty
Eeyore. Oh, well, the first one, they really kind of hit the ground running. Have you watched all of the first one?
All the first season. Yeah.
No, well, first episode.
First, you watch all the,
you haven't even seen the half of it. There are things.
But the first episode has the degloved foot in it, I think.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. I kind of close my eyes.
No, because I love the way they describe somebody coming in, man versus car or woman versus train. You know, that's their kind
We've
of shorthand.
We've got a chinlack coming in. We need ketamine and rock.
Oh no. Because I was traumatised by Eeyore growing up. So I think that just
this
medical drama
honestly makes Eeyore look like Coco Melonites.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Because it's not like in, you know, in Eeyore, everyone looked clean.
Yeah.
There was never any blood. This, like,
there
it's called
so
The Pit for a reason.
Much
you know?
Blood in this, yeah.
Yeah, and there's rats in it as well.
Yeah. Oh.
In the hospital.
You're putting me off now.
Yeah. They're understaffed, sorry. And they're trying to get money. Like, Dr. Robbie's doing his best, you know?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. There's people queuing outside. You get this always. And it's like, but like, I'm only halfway through. Like, how long is their day? Because it starts at 7 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning.
I think it's supposed to be a standard like 12-hour shift, but like obviously something happens that warrants them staying on a bit longer. I'll leave it at that for anyone who's not caught up yet.
Yeah,
I think it's like 15 episodes. I think the second series is also slated for 15 episodes, but that's why you also get like it's really interesting. You get as you're following along because each episode, I should say, if anyone's not familiar, each episode is an hour of a medical shift. So you get to see the day team, and then you get to see the night team come in as well and like do the handover. But that's also what makes it kind of different to your, it's like, so because you're doing it in real time.
Yeah.
Very stressful, but I love it.
Yeah.
So good.
And nobody seems to go for lunch.
They don't get lunch.
No, in fact, there's one, now this isn't a spoiler, there's one episode where Dr. Robbie spends like half the episode trying to have a pee.
Yeah, and he cannot make it there.
Keep interrupting him.
Because he's pulled from room to room. Yeah. It's very good, but there's a lot of, again, we'll leave it at this for people who haven't caught up or whatever, and it's a bit difficult because it's obviously about
we're
to finish.
We're miles behind now.
I'm not really sure what that release schedule was about. It's obviously about to finish in the States. I think the last episode is out today or tomorrow in the States.
And
of season two, yes.
Yeah.
And we're just starting season two here.
Mm.
We're on episode two, I think. And there seems to have been a couple of like cast shuffles and cast changes. Like I don't know. I think they're talking about a time jump maybe for season three. I don't really know how they'll navigate that, but we'll see. I love it. Very good. Highly recommend.
Okay. It is excellent. Yeah. You need a break though. Like you can't watch it every night, I think. I find, you know, you need a kind of break of a day and then you can go back to the next one to see the next horrific deformity.
Yeah.
They have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. What an escape from real life. This
is good. No, the only actually the only breaks I have is occasionally they because and this is actually they never do this in ER, but it is more true to life that the doctors and nurses nip out for a cigarette.
Yeah,
because you know. That is the way they are.
And you'll always see them sanitising their hands. It's incredible. Yeah.
Yes, constantly.
Yeah.
And their skin must be in shocking condition. Yeah,
shocking.
Anyway, tell us about our first wine, Linda. Now that we've probably put you off watching the rest of that season.
Yeah, like definitely. I'm not sure about this now. Okay, so this is a Cremant d'Alsace, which is outside of Champagne sparkling wine. That's what it's called, Cremant.
Yeah.
So this is of Alsace. And the grapes here could be Riesling, could be Pinot Blanc, could be Muscat. And nice, the same made the same way as Champagne. So there's loads of mousse, loads of bubbles, persistent little bubbles in it. And green apple, kind of brioche toasty notes and that. So it's just really fresh, crisp. So again, what would you have with this? You could have little fried fish, fried canapés, fish and chips. Sushi, whatever you want, a little bit of an aperitif style. It's only 12% alcohol. It is, and again, it's just got that kind of, instead of the price tag of Champagne, a sparkling from a lesser known region, Cremant.
Yeah, and is there a difference between a Cremant, in the way it's made, I mean, between a Cremant and a Prosecco and
yeah,
and
so Champagne? Prosecco is going to be in a tank and they pump in the CO2. So this is made by the same way as Champagne, where they have the second fermentation in the bottle. So they freeze the top to disgorge it and they may add a dosage to change the sugar level. But it's much, much fizzier and much more sparkling, loads more bubbles in the bottle than a Prosecco would have. Prosecco has the two styles, Frizzante and Spumante.
Yeah.
But Cremant and Champagne and Cava would all be made the same way. So it gives that more persistent mousse, more bubbles, as you can see in the glass. So, yeah, it's really interesting. And you get that brioche kind of note as well, a bit toastier and things like that.
Oh, yummy.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah.
You like that? So that's available in Super Value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one texter says, whatever about the Pit versus ER comparison, the Pit makes Casualty look like an episode of Barney. Someone else says, I'm not saying how I'm watching season two of the Pit, but there's a scene where shite explodes. That's very funny. Something to look forward to. Yeah, I think that's a bit of a theme in season one as well. Yeah. Sorry, Linda. You're never going to watch. You're never going to
watch from behind your eyes.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Dude. Well, actually, no. And actually, it's not, it's funny what makes you, like, if I had legs, I'd
kill you. Oh, yeah. My God. I actually watched that on the flight over Japan. Not sure why I did that. And actually, your boyfriend, Zara, messaged me and said, you're watching insane plane films because I watched that and Train Dreams on the way over. Oh, enjoyed them both. God. If I had legs, I'd kick you was, like, I loved it, but that was visceral in a way.
Oh, my God. The most anxiety-provoking film I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. Oh.
No, it's horrific.
Like, yeah, but there's a scene with involving the tube where, I'm not easily squeamish at all.
Oh, even thinking about it is kind of brain. Yeah.
If it wasn't Jessie Buckley's year, I do think Rose Byrne was in with.
Yeah.
In this interview, she was excellent.
She's excellent.
She was, yeah. It must have been exhausting.
Yeah.
And just great to see her in that kind of role as a comedy. Like she did it so well. Yeah.
What movie would you like to talk about first?
Maybe we go with Undertone because there's a bit more to talk about plot-wise, I think.
All right. Okay, Undertone coming up after this.
Yeah, there. Did you hear that?
I did. What was that?
I don't know. I'm gonna play it louder. Oh my, you heard that, right? Tell me you heard that.
Yes.
Good.
What's it saying?
Yeah, I can't really make it out.
I mean, it could be an artifact, an overlap of a previous recording.
Hmm. I don't know. I wonder if they noticed it when they played it back.
Play the next one.
Okay, here we go.
Jessa, babe, are you all right?
Why are you looking at me like that?
What is happening?
is that you're playing really deep music. My headphones actually vibrated every time it went boom. Yeah.
The whole cinema would vibrate when that would happen. So that's kind of one reason why I would say to see Undertone in the cinema, because the sound design is so effective in this. Because otherwise it's quite a slow paced, very minimal horror. So what we heard there in that clip, now could you imagine waking up to your partner sleep talking and that is what they're saying, like almost kind of speaking in tongues?
Okay.
So that's what we're dealing with. We have Evie and Justin, who host a podcast together called The Undertone. So it's a horror podcast. And Justin comes to Evie with an email that he got with 10 voice recordings in it from this guy, Justin, who over the course of a couple of weeks has been recording his partner who's been sleep talking. And we also find out she's pregnant. And as they go through these voice messages, the sleep talking becomes more intense, the banging becomes more intense. And we also kind of get down a rabbit hole of hidden messages and songs, which is one of my favourite kind of elements of any like true crime story, where like we hear people being driven to murder because they heard a backwards message in songs, which is one the case in this. And the topic of songs are nursery rhymes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
So Baba Black Sheep and London Bridge is Falling Down, you'll never hear in the same way again. It's kind of traumatic.
A lot of those were kind of sinister in their original incarnations.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah. And like the central character here, Evie, who's played by Nina Kira, and she's basically the only character actor in the film. Like her mother, so she's at home minding her mother who's bedridden and she's kind of locked in. So she's minding her alone in her family home. But Nina Kira is like carrying this. So we're getting a lot of up close shots of her face while she's listening to these voice messages and researching them. And in her research, she comes across this folklore of Abazu, who was a demon, and a trigger warning as well for this film. Abazu was a demon who was infertile and supposedly caused miscarriages and infanticide in women that they would visit through the hidden messages that they would hear in songs.
Crikey.
Louise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. So is all the action contained in one house?
All in one house. So it reminded me in a way of if you saw that film Skinamarink, which is another Canadian horror from a couple of years ago, where, you know, your house is supposed to be the safest, most comforting place of all time. In these films, they make the house the villain and it's like you need to get out of there ASAP. And also, you need to turn on more lights in the house. Like Evie is constantly, she's recording, she's recording her podcast because her friend Justin lives in London. So she's at 3 a.m. In the living room, one lamp on, the rest of the house in darkness. Like that was stressing me out as it was.
What's that strange noise? I think I'll go and investigate down in the cellar.
Yeah. So the deeper she gets into like recording this episode and researching it, supernatural things start to happen. The lights obviously start flickering. Her mother then she'll find sometimes will be in different positions in the room, even though she's like, you know, bedridden and can't really move at the moment. There's also a Virgin Mary statue that just keeps kind of cropping up in like random places. So she as well is like extremely sleep deprived, which is heightening all of the things that are happening around her. And I will say the final 10-15 minutes of this film, I was not right. Like I was really not right afterwards.
Oh,
I was quite scared.
So Justin, that you never see him.
Never see him.
You just hear him as a voice.
You just hear him as a voice. He's voiced by Adam DeMarco, who was in season 2 of The White Lotus. And he's like a very kind of supportive kind of friend to Evie because he can tell that she's a lot going on. She also is like struggling in her relationship. She herself discovers that she is pregnant. So all of the voice recordings, the content of them, the nursery rhymes, it's all a lot for her. It's a lot to kind of handle.
So the only on-screen actors are her and the mother.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And okay. Like, it's a huge kind of task for Nina Kira to pull off, but she does it actually really well. And I think that like the slow pacing of the film really serves the kind of whole premise of it just being carried by one actor quite well. What I also thought was really fascinating about this, reading about it, is Ian Tucson wrote this, as I said, as a radio play. And it was inspired by his experience of caring for his parents, both parents, as they were dying of terminal cancer at the start of the pandemic. And he used kind of quite a lot of his experiences, and he filmed this film in his actual childhood home.
Where his parents had died.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody relax. Yeah. Dad died over there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. But what's great about this story as well is that, like, it was made for a budget of $500,000. And, like, obviously, because it only has one location, that's kind of easy to do. But then, of course, it was acquired by A24 for seven figures. And on its opening day at the box office, it made $4.3 million.
Okay. So they got the money back. That's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you said you weren't right after the last 15 minutes, but was it a satisfying yeah. ending? Sometimes the horror things are kind of scary for the first hour, but somehow doesn't pay off.
No, you know? No, it paid off. Yeah, yes. No, it absolutely paid off. And as I said, the sound design really heightened it, because it goes from being kind of quite quiet and, you know, minimal to just throwing everything at the walls, almost kind of literally.
Yeah.
I won't say any more on that.
Okay, so, yeah, somebody's texting and said that movie clip has given me the willies. Then I assume you shouldn't go to the actual film if you... This is one you'd recommend to not go to or go to, depending on how much you like to be scared.
Exactly. I do recommend you do watch it, because we don't really get kind of horror films like this where they are a bit more contained. They don't follow like cheesy kind of bad acting. Like, this is actually very successfully done, I think. And very much worthwhile. I would say daytime watch.
Yeah.
Leave the cinema when it's daytime.
In daylight, yeah, yes. That's better.
Yeah.
And then presumably choose a cinema beside a bar.
Yeah.
In daytime.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah. Nice one to go into the weekend.
I want to go into that. Right, Wednesday. There's going to be a season 3 of Wednesday. Yep. And like they're lobbing in names into this, like
lots
like,
of
rate or not.
Big names that we could be seeing around Dublin shortly. Lena Headey, who people know from Game of Thrones, has just joined the cast alongside Andrew McCarthy and James Lance. They're all going to appear in the next season. Don't know specifically what roles, but they're joining Ava Green, who's previously announced, who's going to play Morticia's sister. And Winona Ryder is also starring in an undisclosed role. We also have Chris Sarandon, Noah Taylor, Oscar Morgan and Kennedy Moyer. The end of season 2, we saw Wednesday on a wild caper to save her friend from turning into a werewolf. I think that's a genuine plot point, and I'm pretty sure I'm correct on that. But
okay, fair enough. No, it sounds perfectly plausible.
There you go. Keep
well,
your
season
eyes
2 shot in Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But they're continuing to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For season 3.
In production as of right now, I think. So, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. And is it like, is it set in Ireland or
no.
is it just, okay.
Just they're using us for our incredible backdrops, but not set in Ireland.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose this is news. They've found another video game to base something on.
I get it.
Wow.
I do get it.
No, I mean it's news because I thought they'd run out at this stage.
No, they haven't.
Weren't.
Because Metal Gear Solid, you believe, has never been adapted for the screen. This is going to mean a lot
well,
to
I don't know about you listeners. I'm outraged.
To certain people, okay? This is coming from the people, which I thought was interesting. So it's from the directors of Final Destination Bloodlines, the guys. They kind of like reinvigorated the Final Destination franchise. That film, I actually haven't seen it, but it's supposed to be good and kind of resets it. The directors are Zach Libakovsky and Adam B. Stein. What I didn't realise is they met 17 years ago as competitors on Steven Spielberg's filmmaking reality show called On the Lot, which I'd never heard of before.
No.
And now I'm going to watch every single episode, so I'll report back. Anyway, they're working on this film, Metal Gear Solid. It's this 40-year-old video game franchise. It's never been adapted for screen. Made originally by Hideo Kojima. It's this special ops first person adventure. You're trying to save the world from a weapon of mass destruction, and there's only one fella that can do it, and that is Solid Snake. This particular film that they're making, there's a couple of Metal Gear games, we'll say, but this film is Metal Gear Solid based on the game Metal Gear Solid, which takes place in an alternate history in which the Cold War continued into the 1990s, right? And Solid Snake is trying to lead the charge and free hostages and stuff like that. But if you're familiar with Solid Snake, he has a very specific physique, and the way he was described, and when they obviously animated him and came up with him, they said he was based on Jean-Claude Van Damme, but with a facial appearance of Christopher Walken.
Okay.
So now I'm like, how do we get that in real life when now, kind of respectfully, both those people are a bit old, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was David Brian Hunter who voiced Solid Snake in the games originally. And fun movie fact, he also wrote X-Men and the Scorpion King, among other things. So he has like movie credence as well. But this will be big casting news whenever it is announced.
But you know the way, like some of the more modern adaptations of games, those games themselves are quite a detailed storyline.
Yeah.
Whereas this sounds like just like a first person shooter, really.
I can understand why you think that. And I will say I don't have enough knowledge of the Metal Gear franchise to get into the nooks and crannies of it. But I do think there is, I do think there's like Solid Snake lore, and there's another, there's another man who's a different snake and he has lore. So I'd imagine
there's
like
more than one snake
there. There's more than one snake, and they're trying to, I would imagine they'll try to explore that in the film. But yeah, the video games never stops. We've got the new Super Mario, the Netflix adaptation of Assassin's Creed. We've talked about a couple of others. It's just endless. But I'll take that over, let's do Back to the Future 45 times again. You know what I mean? Let's do Scooby-Doo, but it's slightly different, you know? So
yeah. I wonder who, because this is like, this game's 40 years old. So what age group are they pitching it at?
Well, I was
like, men in their 60s.
But like, no, I do think there are modern iterations of the game, but like, will they be like rushing out to the cinema? Probably not. It probably is the lads who played it in the 90s when they got their first PlayStation and everything changed for them, you know?
Yeah. So,
and I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
I hope they have a nice day at the cinema.
Well, yes, they might. wheeled down by their nurses. It's in here, darling. Try not to fall asleep here. Right, you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break after that. More movies and booze. Someone says Metal Solid Gear.
Metal Gear Solid
was based on the Kurt Russell movie Escape from New York. How meta. A new movie based on a video game that was based on a movie.
Oh my God, it's eating itself.
Escape from New York was...
I've never seen
it. It was kind of fun. It was it was kind of daft. But, you know, one of those kind of 80s action movies. Someone else says The Pit is overrated. It's just ER with more gore. The writing is basic and the characters bland, says Jim.
Incorrect, but okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, Jen, whatever.
Yeah, you're very entitled to your opinion, Jim, of course. We'll just dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah.
Jim, or perhaps someone else, or perhaps some fella sitting, imagine. Some fella sitting in his tractor in the middle of O'Connell Street. He hasn't washed in 3 days. And the next thing, the phone rings. Let's have a drink to celebrate Susan's success.
Hey. Okay, so we are still in Alsace, which again, just a reminder for anybody, is northeast of France on the border with Germany. That's why they have these German influence wines. But this is a Riesling. It's Gustav Laurent Riesling Reserve. So unlike Spain, reserve on a Alsace wine label means it's just using the better quality grapes from a particular vineyard. So they might have a little bit more sunshine or whatever. But there's grapes known as the noble grapes in Alsace. So these are Riesling, Gewürztraminer, Muscat and Pinot Gris. And they'd be the key grapes that would be on the front label. They also have a thing called Gentil, which is a blend of the grapes together. So if it says Gentil, G-E-N-T-I-L, on the label, it's a blend. And they are my favourite if you're starting off with Alsace. I think they're a great introduction too, because Gewürztraminer as a grape on its own is very intense. It's really like, Gewürztraminer is really Turkish delight. It's really rose petal. It's like perfumed. So it's a little bit intense for some people. So if you want to try just a little lower version of that, Ajanti is a great one. But here we have the Riesling, so it is dry. Remember we were saying, are they sweet? They're not. It is bone dry here. So it's got that really tart kind of green.
It does,
Smith apple.
Yeah. Gets at the back of the teeth kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's really crisp. It's refreshing. That's what they're supposed to be like here. So again, this these styles, I've booked the King Citric for my birthday. This month is my birthday month.
Oh, congratulations.
Birthday month, you know.
And
just, it's a series of celebrations, presumably. Yes, of course.
I love going to the King Citric because they have a Pinot Blanc from Alsace, Hugel, that's specially for them. And again, think seafood, your crab, your mussels, all of that is just insane. But Riesling, again, sommelier's friend, they all love them because they're just so easy to pair with so many different types of food. So, yeah, I think, what else have I to tell you about them? Do you like that?
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really
it?
Nice. Like,
it's
sharp.
Refreshing.
Yeah.
We're going to change your vocab. Sharp, refreshing.
Yes.
But I mean sharp in bracket complimentary.
Okay. Yeah.
It has a taste, all right.
Crisp and refreshing, but it has a really long finish, and that's like only 12.5%. Brand new vintage, 2024. And available in, where you got this, McHugh's, Wine Online, Pinto Wines, Malloy's, Wine Centre, Kilkenny. Most independents will have a different producer. They don't have loads of different producers because They don't sell in huge volumes.
Yeah.
But they will all and look for the top shelf stuff. But
hey, would it be a relatively small area, really? Yeah,
like it's not popular. And in fairness, they are pumping money into marketing the wines here again. And I signed up for a masterclass that's on this month as well, the day after my birthday. And there's a consumer event on the 27th of April as well. So trying to introduce consumers to these wines. It's not just whites. It's Pinot Noir as well, just about ripe in that as well. Mm. So they've got loads of different styles, something to suit everyone. And I think they're underrated. And I kind of forgot about them myself as well until I signed up to the masterclass and went, oh yeah, they're on my radar.
Yeah.
And then, so Trimbach, Hugel, Sipmac, Mère Fonnet and Gustave Lawrence would be, and Arthur Metz would be the most popular ones in Ireland.
Okay. So would there be many people going to the King Cedric?
Going to which?
The King Cedric.
Look now, you know. There's about eight of us, yeah.
Okay.
It's they don't know they're going yet, yeah. But,
oh, right, okay.
I have friends over from London, so all right. We're going out to Houghton.
And that's like buckets of seafood.
Just like platters. Oh, can't wait.
Well, yeah. I actually had deep fried oysters in Japan. Yum.
Do you know what? That's so the nice. Only thing I can't
eat. You won't eat oysters.
Like, I've tried
Hiroshima
a million times.
Really famous for oysters for some reason, and they're delicious.
Nice. I can't. I've tried it. Every single way, and I just can't. Any other fish, seafood, no problem.
I don't like any other seafood then.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We could go out just and eat like all salty. The oysters.
Yeah. And it's a texture thing with oysters.
Yeah,
it's
but
that
I've
wobbly
tried
stuff
it.
Going down
I
your throat.
It.
Ooh.
No.
Yeah. You just chew it twice and then don't have
no.
to.
Yeah.
Yum.
Yeah, but like you look like a lunatic eating an oyster then, you know?
Yeah, I like the attention though, you know? There's a performance in it.
Watch it down with an Alsace.
Crazy lady is eating. Somebody wants to know if you're an Aries or a Taurus.
Taurus.
Okay.
Very good. Yeah.
I don't know what
the bull. I don't know. I think it changes around the 20th. I'm the 26th for all those birthday cards.
And our Tauruses, what are they? What are their defining features?
Amazing and stubborn. I don't know. Okay. I don't think I am.
I don't either. I only know my own.
Don't know really. They're meant to be stubborn. I'm not stubborn.
No.
Sure, I'm not.
No.
Oyster Rockefellers are the only way to eat them. Oyster
the
Rockefeller.
Oyster Rockefeller.
Sounds expensive.
Yeah,
it does sound expensive. Maybe is it, I don't know, you put
Tabasco on it or
Tabasco
something?
Tabasco in it, yeah.
Oh, well, I've eaten them like that and they're absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
You kind of need other kind of sauce on them as well, I think.
It's a dish consisting of oysters on the half shell that have been topped with a rich sauce of butter, parsley and other green herbs.
I haven't had that, but now I really want one.
Yeah.
Yum.
Yeah.
Mm.
There you go.
There you go.
That wouldn't change your mind though, Linda.
Yeah, just gotta give that a go. Yeah, I've never.
Would we change it to movies and oysters?
Movies and oysters. Well, if anyone from the King Cedric is listening, when
please,
Linda comes along,
please, you can
serve one of those out to her on the house. Right. Let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. Here's a clip.
So how is everything? Well, it's all good.
Yeah.
I hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. I almost hate to say it, but my life's kind of been like a dream.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Good. That's great to hear.
And you?
Me? You know, ups and downs, but everything's it's good.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
That's great to hear, dear. You're out of your box on something. Right, so which segment, which part of the thing was that clip?
That's from Mother.
Yeah.
So that is Vicky Creeps lying through her teeth about her life being a dream. I think if anyone ever says that, you know they're lying. She, in fact, is actually having a terrible time at the moment. More so with kind of like her financial situation. She's kind of lying to her mother, played by Charlotte Rampling, and her sister, played by Cate Blanchett, who actually does bring some good news to this annual tea gathering that they have in their mother's house, where she has gotten a promotion at work, where she's going to be preserving and protecting the historical buildings of Dublin City.
Yeah. Right, okay, very nice. Yeah.
So we also in that segment get to see Cate Blanchett having some car difficulties in Stony Batter. So it's very fun, you know, with the Dublin kind of element to it, like looking around to see if you can spot, you know, your friends' houses or see if you can see, you know, your car or like anyone that you know in the background. So that's a bit distracting.
That's where my stolen bike got went.
Exactly.
Kind of thing, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So that actually is kind of the weaker of the three, I thought, anyway, of the stories within this film. For me, the father story, which kicks it off, was the best one and actually was kind of the seed for the film, because Jim Jarmusch said that initially the idea for this came from him wanting to write a film where Tom Waits played Adam Driver's father. And that's...
Okay. Will you be my dad,
yeah,
Tom?
Yeah. And then so Maya Bielik, she plays Adam Driver's sister in that story. And she came to the film because Jarmusch loves Jeopardy, which I think she was hosting
for
a bit.
Oh, the game show. Yeah. Right, okay.
But that story is really great because the Adam Driver and his sister Maya Bielik, they go out to New Jersey to visit their seemingly reclusive and kind of dothery father who's living alone in this gorgeous lakeside house. And they're concerned about like his money troubles, things in the house not working. And they have like a short stay with them. And then it turns out that, you know, the siblings are very uncomfortable, very kind of stifled interaction between the three of them. And in that way, like that kind of carries over into the mother story as well, where it has this thing of like siblings or kind of parents in the dynamic when they're a bit older. And there's maybe like a kind of sadness there of maybe guilt of not going out to visit as much or relationships not being as strong. But it's not like dour. It's kind of bizarrely quite funny in how universal and how well Jarmusch like writes it and how well everyone acts it. And then it turns out that Tom Waits is actually a bit of a trickster. He's doing grand. He's got a real Rolex and he has like a lady friend that he's organising to have a date with once the children go off. So he's grand. And then in the brother-sister one, we have India Moore and Lucas Sabbath who played twins. They're in Paris and they're going to their apartment where they grew up with their parents. Their parents have just tragically died in a plane crash. So they're going to say goodbye to the apartment, and they're the only kind of siblings within the film that have a very like tight emotional bond, and I guess the fact that they're twins as well really kind of helps that. But that's kind of a very emotional one where they're looking back positively and lovingly on their family dynamic, which the other kind of relationships don't necessarily have. They're all very kind of closed off from one another and afraid to be real and honest. And Jarmusch actually wrote this as well within 3 weeks. But he had said that like he's been collecting stuff for like decades, of course, when you do something about family. It's not one to say double screen watching, even though it is really slow paced and there's not a whole lot of dialogue. There's a lot of really considered details throughout the three stories that unify them. So like things like the Rolex watch creeps up in the three of them. The family members will all be wearing like coordinated outfits and colorways. They all toast to one another. They're skateboarders, and two of them, there's like a woman walking a dog. So it's kind of fun to like point out the ways that he's tying them together with certain motifs and all that.
Yeah.
And it's really good. Like I kind of sometimes with these films where they are slow paced, it can be hard to fully lock in. But I think he's done a really great job with the cast he's brought on. Like Adam Driver, I always just think is really excellent and everything, and especially in the stuff he's done with Jarmusch. His Patterson role is really great. Charlotte Rampling is great. Cate Blanchett obviously is amazing. And even in the brother-sister, they're new actors to me, India Moore and Luke Sabbath, but they're really good and it all just feels very naturalistic as well, which I loved.
Yeah. Okay. And is it... It sounds that from what you've said, because you mentioned double screening, then we don't have to be going out to the cinema to look at this.
Not necessarily. No, this I think is kind of a nice one to watch at home in the evening time. It is being distributed by Mubi, so it will be on Mubi to watch as well as if you do want to go see it in the cinema. Yeah. But it is a nice afternoon, evening, post-dinner with a glass of Riesling.
How long is it though since he made his last, it's a good 10 years, maybe more than that.
It's only about 6 years.
Is it? So, okay, it feels much longer.
Yeah, it was that absurd as zombie one, The Dead Don't Die, which also had Adam Driver. I don't think it was as favourably received. Yeah,
because I think of him as a kind of a 90s filmmaker, really.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Like The Down by Law and The Stranger Than Paradise, which I actually only watched for the first time during the summer. And I just loved how he makes everything look really real and gritty. And just the characters that he writes are very interesting, even though they don't always kind of, they're not over the top. Like they're just very contained and you want to spend time with them.
Yeah. Right. Tell us about The Husbands, Fionnuala.
I have talked about this before, I think when it was announced initially. Juno Temple is due to star in it. It's a book to TV adaptation. The book is by Holly Gramazio, one of my favourite books I've read in the last couple of years. Holly Gramazio's background is in video games, I think, which is what lends to the plot of this book. Essentially, Juno Temple is going to play Lauren, the lead character. She comes home from a hen to find her husband at home, but she's never gotten married. This husband has appeared out of nowhere and she's like, what is going on with my life? More disturbingly then, the husband changes when he goes up to the attic. So there's something going on with the attic that every time the husband goes up, she gets a new husband.
Yes, yeah.
It's very funny, very good. I would recommend that as a book now because I'm not sure when we'll get the TV series.
Because most people would think there's a strange man in my house, you know, stalker, weird burglar. How do they get over the... Well, and your husband
she is a bit like that, but like the man is being like very nice and is being like, it's just like he's always been there, but her life has kind of like obviously changed immediately. Once she cops the attic thing, she kind of sends a few of them up and tries to go, oh, maybe try before you buy, like I'll settle on whoever my husband
better
is.
Ones. Can she say go up to the attic now? I'm
essentially,
done with you.
Yeah, but sometimes they don't like, sometimes how do you get them to go up to the attic without like a proper reason? So that kicks up its own quandaries. It's a very good book. I would really recommend if you're looking for something new to read. And Juno Temple is, I'm obsessed with Juno Temple. People know her from Ted Lasso and that series of Fargo that started out really good and then kind of ended weird, but she was incredible in it. She's Lauren, but we've finally gotten the husbands, or at least some of them anyway. They've just been cast. I don't know who is which husband yet, but in terms of husbands that we're going to see Joe Alwyn, who was just in Hamnet, also went out with Taylor Swift, Richard Gadd from Baby Reindeer, Kingsley Benadire, who I remember fondly from the High Fidelity TV series that only got one season and should have gotten more, Joel Kinnaman, Daniel Ings, Bob Morley and Fenty Balogun. That's all them. No air date yet. I don't even think it's in production. Probably not if we're only getting this casting news. Also to say it's being written by Miriam Bache, who's worked on Succession and stuff like that. So I'm very, very excited for this whenever it does come out.
Apple are kind of good at these kind of off-kilter kind of things, it must be said.
If they nail it, it'll be really good.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And it's like husband of the week. Oh, that's hilarious. That's great. Taurus women possess a unique blend of sensuality, determination, and an unwavering commitment to their values and relationships.
Aww.
Oh, that's a... Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Does that sound accurate? Yeah,
she'll take that. There we go. That's all we have time for. Thanks to Fionnuala Jones, Zara Hederman, and the sensual and determined Linda Coogan.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.